I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to take a look at and a listen to some innovative new messaging from the Indiana State Police. We're going to talk about ways to promote safety as we approach the busy summer holiday travel season and how the police are using new ways to communicate with citizens. My guest is Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine, Public Information Officer for Indianapolis District 52. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimitswfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's the public information officer for Indianapolis District 52. We're going to be talking about a lot of things with him, but the thing at least that I am most curious about is going to be his new use of social media and the innovative ways he's trying to communicate with the citizens of Indiana about questions of public security. I'd like to welcome him to the show right now, Sergeant Perrine. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks, John. I'm really excited to be here.
And since we're both John, we'll do the first name thing because radio is supposed to be a friendly.
Yeah.
We were joking before we went on the air is all we need now are a couple of callers named John, and everyone will be horribly confused. And if you do want to call in and join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So one of the things that that really has pulled people in is that you are using non-traditional media and new ways to communicate with people. Where did that inspiration come from?
You know, it's about the passion to engage with my community and being passionate about serving that community. And so I took this PIO job a little over a year ago, and I wanted to do things different. Well, I started dabbling in Twitter a little bit. I didn't know a lot about it. And I found out very quickly how huge of an audience I can reach through using that. And I also found that by using a little bit of comedy and putting some real personalities behind the badge that I wear, I think I've really found a niche that allows me to get a message to people that otherwise wouldn't be hearing our police messages.
So when you say humor, we're going to give you an example of this here in a minute or so. But, you know, humor is something that is not often associated with law enforcement in general, and the state police in particular. I think you guys rival the Secret Service for the stone face jokes and all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
A couple of questions. One, how did you first think, well, maybe I'll try this a little bit? And two, how did your superiors react when you did?
Yeah, you know, you're right. We do work in a profession where we have to tread that line very mm-hmm. lightly with humor and seriousness, and there are many times where I have to be serious, but there's also times where I don't have to, and I can show that human side and let my personality really come out in what I do. And my hope is that people will start to realize that I'm just a person. They won't necessarily judge me as a police officer because I wear a uniform, but they'll know me as John Perrine, the guy who serves his community as a police officer, and that's my goal.
How did your superiors react, though, when you first started saying, oh, by the way?
You know, yeah. You know, I've gotten an incredible amount of support from my superiors because of the positive feedback we've gotten from the public. I think if that feedback was differently, they would tell me to back off a little bit, but nothing but support for all the way up. And it's been really nice to have that support because the community tends to like it, and that's what they want to talk about.
Okay, we're going to play the audio from a video that you did hear that's gone viral, and it's got that kind of tongue-in-cheek approach that you were talking about. There are two ways we could do this. I suppose I could ask you to set it up or just deconstruct it on the back end. I think maybe it probably we ought to let people listen to it, and then we'll talk about it in the aftermath. So we're going to listen to the audio from a video that I'm not even going to steal from it. You'll be able to figure out pretty quickly what's going on here.
The auto industry has made incredible advancements on technology and safety and vehicles. But what if I told you there's a feature on every car that's standard that not only will help prevent crashes, but also help prevent road rage a little bit? Let me show you. So if you look at your steering wheel here, to the left side of your steering wheel, there's this stick that comes out. And it's pretty incredible. It's called a turn signal. If you push it down, let me show you what it does. It's amazing. On the front of your car, it starts making a light flash. Now, if you push it down, it indicates that you're going to turn to the left. But not only on the front, let me show you what else it does here. On the back of your car, it also flashes a light, indicating that you're going to turn left or make a lane change. Now, it does just the opposite if you push it up. Again, it's right here next to your steering wheel. It may require that you put down your coffee or your cell phone or whatever you have in your hands so that you can safely drive. And if you push it up, it indicates that you're going to go right. Now, this is not only the right thing to do, it's not only against the law not to use it, but it's the courteous thing to do. And it's going to help people around you understand your indication that you're going to make a lane movement or make a turn. So please, use your turn signal.
That was the audio from a video that Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine, he's the public information officer for Indianapolis District 52, put together to offer some really sophisticated highway safety tips, driving safety tips. How did you get the idea to do that video?
You know, you say put together, we should use that term lightly. I pulled in the post one morning after driving into the office and after frustration of seeing so many people not using their signal, and it's just kind of a pet peeve of mine, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna do this quick little informative video. And that was the second take. The first take didn't work because the audio didn't work for some reason. And I just did it. And when I took it inside, I showed one of the super, and you talk about that traditional state police. The first trooper I showed was a sergeant. And he said, "Ooh, that's good, but I don't think I'd post that. That's too condescending." And I showed my district lieutenant, who's the commander, and he started laughing. He said, "You have to post this. This is funny stuff." And so I did, knowing that it was either going to go really well or I was going to crash and burn really quickly. And after about probably 7 or 8 hours of it being out there, I started to realize, me and the department as well, that it was going to go pretty well.
How many views is it racked up?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to track because so many people shared it on their sites, but the best estimation is on my page. It was 15 million, but ABC World News showed it, and they had 40 million views just on ABC World News.
So it could be that as many as more than 50 or 60 million people.
Yeah, I think that's a safe guess. One of the coolest things was I started getting a lot of messages, of course, and a news company in Taiwan sent me a message. They had subtitled the video and showed it in Taiwan. And so that's kind of cool that it went worldwide that quickly.
And how quickly did all of this happen?
You know, I posted it on a Friday and let it sit through the weekend, and I didn't really even pay much attention to it. I was off for the weekend, and I came back on Monday, and it was absolutely unbelievable. The local news channels had started playing it and the radio stations, and it was a lot of fun, and I learned so much from how that video went, and that kind of steered the way that I started using social media even more.
When you say it steered the way, what changes?
You know, if I would have just stood up there in front of a camera and talked about turn signals in a serious manner, do you think I would have gotten 50 million views on Facebook? No, probably not. But when you add a little bit of comedy, something that people can relate to, and they can see the human side to it, I think they hit that share button. And so that's what I'm learning, is if I want to get a message out there, I've got to find a way to make it interesting and entertaining for people to want to share and view.
Did you hear from any people who had, you know, the first sergeant you showed it to, who said, "Ooh, that's condescending"? Do you have any negative feedback?
You know, I'd say probably 5 to 10% of the feedback I got was negative. I think some people didn't find the humor in it. They didn't like the sarcasm that I used. But I would say 90% of the people thought it was a much needed. They've begged me to do more. They want more videos like this out there, and they were just entertained by such a simple message.
We're talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's public information officer for Indianapolis District 52, and a new social media guru when it comes to communicating matters of public safety and interest to the public. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So that video went huge. Often when something is that successful, then suddenly there's a lot of pressure to say, okay, give us the next one. So what areas, and you know, I know from my my years of writing a newspaper column, humor can be the hardest thing to write or communicate. I mean, so it's you've got to be really, really focused to be funny on demand.
Yeah, you know, and that's correct. And we have to be careful, too. You know, some of these topics we talk about are sensitive to people mm-hmm. who have experienced the negative effects of them. And so we don't want to be insensitive to those people when we do these types of videos, you know. I've teamed up with Mike Pruitt. He's a fireman at Wayne Township Fire Department. And we've started a series of videos you can find on the State Police YouTube channels. And we're very early in the productions of those. But we want to play in not only on the relationship between police and fire and the jokes and the puns we make at each other, but we want to get a positive message out. So we did a video about See Something, Say Something. Well, that video, you can't add comedy to a topic like See Something, Say Something. So it wasn't funny. It was a serious message. The next video we did was about the Heimlich maneuver, and essentially, Mike was sleeping in a recliner like most firemen do, and I walked in and I took his donut and I started eating his donut and I started choking on the donut, and he wakes up and gives me the Heimlich maneuver and he saves the day. So we played a little bit of comedy into that, but he also demonstrated how to do the Heimlich maneuver. So we're trying to find ways to entertain people while getting a safety message out there.
How do you choose the subjects or the topics you're going to do for the videos?
You know, sometimes it's things that we've thought of for a long time, and other times it's current events. Last week we did a hot car demonstration where Mike and I locked ourselves in a car for 40 minutes with no air conditioning, and it was 90 degrees out. It got over 120 degrees in the car.
Burn the uniforms when you're
done. And yeah. I've never sweated that much in my life. Yeah. And essentially the idea behind that is there's events out there where the parents are leaving their kids in their car or pets.
Yeah,
and so we wanted to bring awareness to that, and we did. We got lots of views, lots of coverage from the local media, and we're trying to find new ways to get our messages out there because the old boring PSA is no fun anymore.
Have you got a sense of who you're reaching that you weren't reaching before with all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, you have people that are pro police that follow police news essentially. But then there's a whole generation of people out there that live on social media. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm finding my way to that generation, the younger generation. I go to local high schools and kids in high school know me as the state police Twitter guy. And that's really neat that I'm able to reach those young audiences as well.
Is that on your business card now, state police Twitter guy?
It probably should be, but they don't even know my name, but I'm okay with that. That lets me know that my messages are getting out there.
Which is more, you know, we tend to lump all of this stuff together, social media. But they really are different media platforms. Which one do you find the most effective in trying to communicate with the folks that you're trying to reach?
You know, that's a great point. And the only two that I'm using right now are Facebook and Twitter. I'm trying to dabble into Instagram a little bit because I understand there's a whole different generation of folks on Instagram.
But yeah, my children tell me that Facebook is for old people.
Yeah, exactly. But I can tell you, my preference is Twitter. I can get things out quickly to a wide audience. With positive interaction. Facebook, it goes to a large audience, but sometimes that audience is unaffected by my message, but yet they want to say negative things to me and about it and things like that. So it almost opens that door for people to attack the police, and that's what I'm finding with some of my messages. So Twitter and Facebook right now, and for the most part, if you want to follow along, I'm much more active on Twitter than I am on Facebook right now.
Is it difficult because Part of what social media are is, you know, maybe the ultimate open forum where anybody can say anything, which, as you point out, means sometimes you're going to get feedback where people are saying, uninformed or otherwise, things about the police and all of that. Do you have a policy of engaging, not engaging with those folks?
Or? You know, we don't have a written policy. There's some where I do and some I don't. But I'll tell you, at first it made me upset when I started seeing those negative comments, but then I realized it gave me a platform to respond to some of those. For instance, the turn signal video. A lot of the response was, I see cops every day not using their turn signal. And my response to that is, you're probably correct. We as police officers cannot pretend we're without sin. We're human beings as well. And hopefully my message would resonate with other law enforcement as well, not just the public. My message wasn't for public only. Hopefully some police officers would see that and maybe start using their turn signal as well. And so I was able to engage that and maybe change some of their minds about, hey, I'm just a guy, and give us a chance here.
We are talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He is public information officer for Indianapolis District 52. We're talking about innovative ways that he's using social media and other platforms to reach a new audience on public safety questions. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's public information officer for Indianapolis District 52 and is pioneering new ways to communicate with the public using social media, viral videos, and other techniques to sort of shake up the public service announcement as we have known it. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a regular listener named Jerry has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, do the new ways to communicate with the public include body cameras for state police officers?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. That's one question we dig into very deeply every day is body cameras and how would they work within our department. You got to imagine we have 1,100 plus troopers on this department. And for them to wear a body camera and store that footage would cost millions and millions of dollars every year just to store that video footage. So that's one of the logistical problems of it. Right now, the state police does not currently wear body cameras, but it's not something that we haven't heavily researched at this point. The interesting thing about body cameras is you're still only seeing one perspective from that camera. You don't necessarily have the opportunity to read body language, to see things that are going on around you, to feel the emotion that's going on. And so sometimes you'll see this footage from the body camera. It'll give you a perception of the way something happened. And maybe it's not really how it went. And so I would ask people that see this footage to keep an open mind because they are a great tool. They're a great tool for police officers because it allows us the opportunity to when we do things the right way, to show that we did them the right way. And for the public, it's a great tool because if something goes wrong that was done the wrong way, again, it shows that. So right now, the state police isn't wearing them, but it's not something.
Is the primary consideration the cost one or are there others? Because it does strike me that there might be some privacy or other other components there.
You're exactly right, John. And one thing that we're concerned about is what part of that video is public record? Well, essentially, the law reads now that any part of that video would be public record. If I knock on somebody's door at 3 o'clock in the morning and tell them their 16-year-old child was just killed in a car crash, that emotion that my camera captures is public record. And somebody could get a hold of that and put it on TV of that person in that most detrimental point in their life. If I go into a house on a search warrant, now people have video footage of inside somebody's house. So there's a lot of things that are public record that would not be good for. So there's some laws in there that we need to see what is releasable and what's not. And when does the camera come on? That's the other question.
We have a question via Facebook. And again, if you want to join this conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. This comes from a listener named Gene, who writes, will you try to tackle driving while texting?
Yeah, you know, the thing is we've got to find a good way to do that. And that's it's a problem. I think we all see it. And unfortunately, I'm afraid we're all guilty of it at some point or another in our life of mm-hmm. being on our phone while we're driving. And so we need to try to get the laws tightened up a little bit about what you can and can't do with your phone while you're driving. And yeah, I think it's definitely a danger, and it's a great thing that I could try to tackle. We just have to find a safe way to do it.
In terms of, would you try to do that one with humor as well? Is that some of it is I got to figure out a funny way to deal with this?
That's exactly right, John. But unfortunately, texting and driving crashes have negatively affected a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so if I make fun of that or make jokes about it in an effort to spread my message, it appears I'm being insensitive to those people that have lost people or seriously been injured because somebody was texting and driving. So that's the difficult thing about a video like that is I've got to find a way to come across in a positive manner, but to still get that message out there.
Is that, I mean, are there some areas where you can just say flatly, you know, the state police, we would not ever try to be funny about this?
Oh, of course. Anytime there's a topic that's overly sensitive, like I mentioned, the see something, say something. You know, that video came out on the heels of some things that are happening in Europe right now, and we are not insensitive to that at all. There's no way you should joke about a suspicious package or a suspicious person. We need to take that seriously. So, yeah, absolutely, there are some topics that we would not make humor about.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. This is Sharon, who says the Indiana State Police have another fun video on YouTube of some officers lip-syncing at the state fair last year. Do they do that on their own? And can you please ask them to do it again this year?
You know, those young troopers did do that on their own. They were coming in on the – now, working the state fair detail is a long 3 weeks. It's a lot of hours. It's hot. It's tiring. And they were at the end of
and
that.
And there are a lot of people.
There's a lot of people. And, you know, they were just having fun with a cell phone, making a video. They never expected it to be public, let alone be posted like it was. Mm-hmm. And it was great. So, no, you know, we encourage our troopers to engage in the communities, honestly, but to really – I mean – one of our key values of the Indiana State Police is community, and we want to be valuable assets within our community. Well, we need the community to trust us. In order for them to trust us, they have to know us. And those are just personalities coming through.
Are there certain, I mean, is there anything that you would say is too far?
You know, there can be.
For them. What might be some of the parameters?
You know, anything that would show them violating any kind of policy or law or being insensitive to a tragic event. You know, there's a lot of things out there that you just have to use your best judgment for. Am I always the most sensitive person? Probably not. There's probably some things I don't think about. But I can tell you there's often times where I've typed up a funny tweet and then I've thought about it for a few minutes and deleted it because I've as I go through every possible reach of that tweet, I realize that there might be a negative effect on that.
Have there ever been ones that you've put up and then had to pull down?
You know, there's none that I've had to pull down, but there are some maybe that I've put up that as soon as it hits, I realize I have a second thought. Well, maybe I wasn't thinking of it that way, and I do pull them back down every once in a while, but very rarely. I'm very careful. I try to be very careful about what I put out there publicly to be sensitive to, because I'm reaching all aspects of every age group, every generation, you know, and so I want to make sure I'm sensitive to everybody if I can be.
Could you give us an example of one that you pulled down?
You know, right off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. You know, there was one recently, or it wasn't recently, it was last year when the FDA said people shouldn't eat cookie dough.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out with a funny tweet about cookie dough, and then I realized, you know what, maybe somebody out there has gotten sick from eating cookie dough and mm-hmm. really sick, and I didn't want to be insensitive to that person, and I deleted that tweet.
So, in terms of this, do you have a set schedule then or something where you try to say, okay, we're going to do a new video every week, every 2 or 3 days, every month?
You know, my job as a public information officer is so fluid. I can't really have a set schedule on anything. I'm so reactive to current events, things that are happening within our district. And so we try to kind of plan things out. Mike Pruitt and I are getting together, you know, hey, we want to do something for 4th of July. So let's get together in the weeks prior and we're going to do a pool safety video, a fireworks safety video. We're going to do a general safety video, you know. And so we try to plan those around big events. You know, the See Something, Say Something video came out the week before the 500. So we try to base our videos on current events.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's public information officer for Indianapolis District 52 and a and an emerging social media guru who's figuring out new ways to connect the state police with the community. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a question via Twitter from a listener who says, do you have any suggestions for organizations in the U.S. on how they could better engage with communities?
Yeah, I'm going to say definitely think outside the box. A lot of times we want to have a closed mind. You got to have an open mind about who your audience is going to be. You've got to humanize that message. You've got to make sure that you're going to reach as many as possible, because I don't want to just think like a 36-year-old police officer. I've got to think like a little bit broader than that. And so I would say broaden your messaging, open your mind, and try to engage every aspect of that social media that you can.
What was the hardest thing about making that transition from, presumably you didn't go into police work to say, okay, I'm going to be a work in communications, which in essence is what you're doing right now. You're trained in all sorts of other ways. What was the hardest thing making that transition and saying, okay, I'm going to be a different kind of public servant here?
You know, John, it is interesting because before I got this job, I spent 13 years as a police officer, as a state trooper, with a primary focus in tactics and firearms training. I was one of the lead trainers on the department for a long time. And so I've always had a passion for engaging the community. I always was the one to sign up to go do the school talks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so when I transitioned to this, it's not necessarily a different lifestyle, but it's being able to turn it off and on. I still wear a uniform and drive a police car every day. I still have to respond to those emergencies. I still have to deal with those very, very difficult situations. I just have to train myself, and I've had to train myself how to turn it on and off, how to go from the serious police officer to the public relations guy who needs to lighten up a little bit to get our messaging out. And so it's just finding that balance. But I'm still very much engaged in the tactics and the police work.
Is there an internal strain in doing that? I mean, in saying, okay, and trying to read the situation and see which, you know, in effect, which persona you're supposed to adopt.
You know, there can be, and every situation is different. You know, if I show up on the scene of a serious crash, the first instinct is to be the police officer, to help the investigation, to tend to the people that are injured, you know, all that other thing. But then I quickly have to transition to, now I've got to gather the proper information to release to the public. And so I've got to balance that. But so far, I haven't really struggled with finding that balance.
So in terms of what have you learned in the new role then that that you did not know going in? I'll leave it there. I've got a follow-up.
But yeah, that's a tough question about what I've learned. And what I've learned is our communities are full of good people who support the police, and they are 100% behind us. And this job has given me not only a platform to make those communications, but to build those relationships with those communities. And what I've learned most is there's more people out there that truly support and love the police than what I was led to believe by reading what I read on social media and the news before I got this job.
And how do you deal with the folks who don't love the police or have see them?
You know, your first instinct would be to become argumentative with them or try to change their perspective. I don't try to change their perspective. I try to understand their perspective. For instance, I was at a Trump rally when he was running for president. We were providing security for that, and I had an opportunity to have a conversation with a young man, and he was very angry that we were there to provide this security, and he had a lot of anger. And so fortunately, him and I had about a 30-minute conversation, and I asked him, I said, you're judging me based on this uniform that I'm wearing, based on the actions of other people that look like me that do this profession. But you don't know me. Give me a chance to have this conversation with you. Get to know me as John Perrine, and then maybe we can understand each other's perspective. And that conversation was great. He gave me some insights to his views on things. I gave him some insights to my views on things. And I wouldn't say a friendship blossomed, but we were able to have a professional conversation.
How often does that occur?
You know, more often than not. And so what's interesting is trying to have an open mind and not being upset because somebody doesn't like the police, but trying to understand why. At some point in their life, they've had a negative encounter with a police officer. And because of that negative encounter, they've now chosen to take that hate out on me that they don't know, that they've never dealt with. I can't change what that encounter is with, or what happened there. But what I can try to change is their perception of me, their perception of the Indiana State Police, and their perception of police in general, and let them know that maybe that was an isolated incident, and we're not all like that.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's Public Information Officer for Indianapolis District 52 and an emerging social media guru. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Glenn has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, sir.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Roadside safety, not only for the emergency vehicles on the interstate, but the cars, the regular Joe pedestrian. Can this officer put out a video? I got stuck a couple years ago on a major intersection in downtown Indianapolis with a flat tire, trying to change it on the driver's side, risk my life, and nobody really... I had flashers on and did everything I could to pull over. Could we get more awareness out there for roadside safety, not only for the interstate, but for the inner city?
Thanks very much for the call and the question.
Yeah, hey, Glenn, that's a great suggestion that you have, and it's definitely a real problem. Unfortunately, we do deal with fatal crashes involving people changing tires along the roadside. And so you're right, we need to educate people on the safest way to do that. And what I recommend first and foremost to all my family who say, what do? I say, you drive on that rim for as long as you can to get to a safe place. If it means tearing up your tire or your rim to get to a safe place, that's absolutely true. But you have to, I'm not saying that people are right or wrong that are driving past you, but you have to respect that traffic as you're out there. As you did, you said you turned on your flashers, you made yourself visible, which is the key. But it all comes down to courtesy, not only following the law, but courtesy. As you're driving along, if you see somebody up on the side of the road, you need to start moving over as soon as you can, because what that does is that allows the people behind you to see that hazard as well. If you wait to the last second to change lanes and move over, and that person behind you sees that, they don't have near enough time to react to that hazard, and they might have no option but to go by in that closest lane. So it all comes to a courtesy of making those movements as soon as you see that hazard, slowing down, making it visible, but absolutely being courtesy and giving people on the side of the road room to work. And you're right, not just emergency vehicles, everybody. Being stalled on the side of the highway is very, very dangerous. We recommend that you stay inside your vehicle because that's the safest place. Like in a snowstorm, if you slide off in the ditch, we don't want people to get out and look at their damage or stand outside because somebody else might slide off at that same spot. And if you're inside your vehicle, you're much safer. So good question, Glenn. And that's something that I'd like to work on is a video on how to do that.
How often is that people are now reaching out to you and saying, because we've already had it a couple of times in this hour, said, how about a video on this? Or how about, are you going to do something about this? How many of those suggestions do you get?
Yeah, you know, I do get several of those, and I greatly appreciate those because it gives me new ideas. And so I keep those in a bank, and some when I have time, I'm going to start. And that's part of the purpose of the series that Mike Pruitt and I are doing, is to get some of those safety messages out.
If people do want to get in touch with you and say, hey, I got an idea, something you ought to do, I think would make for a good video or however you want it, would be helpful. How do they go about doing that? How would they go about sending their suggestion to you?
Yeah, so I'm pretty easily accessible on social media, Twitter at ISP Indianapolis, Facebook, John Perrine / Indiana State Police, or they can email me at jperrine, P-E-R-R-I-N-E, at isp.in.gov.
How many of those, ballpark, you say you get a couple. How often do you... would you say, is it a couple of times a week, or is it more often than that?
Yeah, it's a couple of times a week, and sometimes it always comes on the heels of recent videos that we've released, and so sometimes we work on that there right after a video comes out.
We are talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine today on No Limits. He is the Public Information Officer for Indianapolis District 52. He's made a reputation by exploring social media and other new means of communication to connect with Hoosiers and other citizens. One of his videos went viral and has been seen, as best we can tell, by somewhere between 50 and 60 million people, maybe even more than that, around the country. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's public information officer for Indianapolis District 52, and has become something of an expert on using social media and other forms of new communication.
We use the term expert very lightly.
Expert, okay. Well, emerging expert,
there
we'll
go.
Say.
There
All
we
right.
Go.
To connect with the public and inform them about public safety issues in a way that is sometimes humorous, sometimes offbeat, but is designed to be a little more engaging. I've gotten a question from a listener named Jeff who called in but did not want to go on the air. He is concerned about the speed limit on I-465. Why does it seem like the speed limit is not enforced and everyone drives way too fast? He also wanted to emphasize that he pulled off to call in his question.
Hey, thanks for doing that very much, Jeff. I appreciate it. And you're correct. 465 is a very, very dangerous road as far as speed limits and speed enforcement. And we do our very best. Unfortunately, you know, we've got maybe 10 troopers working that area at any given time on 465. And we get a lot of crashes that we have to respond to in that area. And so it takes a lot of time away from officers being able to enforce those speed limits. And we try. We really, I mean, you might not see us out there, but I can tell you a lot of tickets get written on 465 every single day. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It is.
What is, because we're headed into 4th of July weekend. It's a big travel holiday when a lot of people are on the road and, you know, everyone wants to get where he or she is going in a hurry, generally, because you're always going someplace fun or, you know, you've stretched staying where you were that was fun and you're leaving to get back to your real life and trying to cram that in as quickly as possible. What are some travel tips or some safety things that people should be aware of when they're traveling at this time?
You know, it's all about safety. And you know, we teach people to be a defensive driver. Well, you have to be a defensive driver because there's so many offensive drivers out there that really go and push the limits and make it dangerous for everybody else. So we ask everybody to slow down. Obviously, pay attention when you're driving. Plan your trip accordingly. The biggest thing is, it's incredible. When I go out and work holidays, historically in my career, if you work a holiday, you are going to write a lot of speeding tickets because people tend to get in a hurry. They want to get to that picnic, that barbecue, that family gathering or whatever, and they tend to drive faster than normal. And so we need people to slow down. You know how long it's going to take you to get to your destination, so plan for that and just take it easy. Make sure the biggest one that we get is that causes crashes on our interstates is following too closely, tailgating. People that tailgate, they ride too close, they lose their reactionary gap. So in other words, a hazard's going to happen in front of them. Mm-hmm. They're not going to see it because they're so close to the car in front of them. They've got to back off so they can see that hazard. But just slow down and plan ahead. That's our big advice.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Annie. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can send your question or your comment to nolimits@wfyi.org. She writes, "Hello, I often see two or three people in a vehicle with the driver using a handheld phone. Is this considered distracted driving? How do we make it safer for all to not allow driver to be on the phone when others are inside vehicle?"
Yeah, hi, Annie. And you're right. There are so many aspects to distracted driving. My family and I just recently bought a new minivan, and the amount of technology, take the phone out of play. Mm-hmm. The amount of technology accessible to the driver in that van is absolutely incredible to me. And it's all a distraction. And then you throw a couple of kids in and some friends and a phone, you've got the ultimate distraction. And so we're asking people to limit those distractions. Right now, there are no laws. Although we call it distracted driving, there's no law against making a phone call with your cell phone in the state of Indiana while you're driving. And so we just need to make people aware how dangerous it is. I mean, if you're talking on the phone, you're not focused on driving. And not only makes it dangerous for other drivers, but it makes it dangerous for yourself as well, because hazards might present themselves in a split second that you have to react to. And if you're engaged in that conversation on that phone, you're not going to be able to react to that hazard.
Have we? Because there are states that have made it a law that you're not allowed to use a handheld phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you can run it through the Bluetooth in your car's sound system if you want to, or set the phone down and use the speaker. Do you have any sense of how much safer that would make Indiana roadways if we had a law like that?
You know, I don't really have a sense. I don't know how often we work a crash because somebody was talking on their phone. But think about everything people use their phone for. Just because you have your phone in your hand while you're driving doesn't mean you're texting. You could be using a map or GPS. I mean, almost all of us, mm-hmm. That's what we use to navigate around. I mean, if you told a college kid now, hey, get your paper map out and tell me how to get there, they would have no idea.
Well,
it's a generation.
And reading a map while you're driving isn't much safer.
It's not. It's absolutely equivalent. And the nice thing is you get those voice commands, but you've got to want to make the road safer. And a lot of people say, well, it couldn't happen to me, and not me. But if you're involved in a crash and you're using your cell phone and we find that out, that's not very good on your case when it comes to causing fault of the crash.
We are talking with Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's Public Information Officer for Indianapolis District 52. If you want to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Sharon has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Certainly.
I ride a motorcycle, as does a lot of my friends, and we have found that the people that are distracted with the cell phones are oblivious to motorcycles. And I know that there is a tremendous blind spot when you're driving a car.
Thanks very much for the call. We'll get John to respond to it. Thank you.
Sharon, you're exactly right. Riding a motorcycle is a favorite pastime of many, but it's also dangerous, not just because of the limited size that you have going down the road, but the other drivers that don't see you. I have a pretty personal effect on this. My brother-in-law was riding a motorcycle, and somebody pulled out in front of him, and he hit the truck and flew over. And fortunately, he ended up being okay. He had to be lifelined. The unfortunate thing about that is I was off duty at the time with my wife in the car, who's her brother. And we heard the call go out, didn't know it was him, and we were the first ones on the scene. And we pull up, and my brother-in-law's laying in the road.
Boy. That must
and my wife
really
knew immediately
hard.
When she saw the motorcycle. So it's definitely a sensitive topic for me, and you can count on some motorcycle safety videos coming out, not for the motorcycle rider, but for the other drivers. And you'll see that my social media campaigns often involve safety for those motorcycle riders. You know, look once for a car, look twice for a motorcycle is a term you'll hear me say very often.
Yeah, in terms of motorcycle safety, I through the years I've been a motorcycle rider at times. As father of two growing children, I got to get through college.
Sure.
Some of those activities I've put on hiatus until I get them through. But it struck me even before this explosion of technology that as a motorcycle rider, you had to be two, three, four times as defensive as your average defense because you are so vulnerable out there. There's no getting around it. Are there other areas where you would say to people who are in specific circumstances, you know, everyone's got to be wary, but you have to be even more wary than most?
Yeah, for a motorcycle rider, it all comes down to that anticipation. You have to anticipate that any vehicle around you is going to do the worst possible thing, whether it be run that stop sign, come into your lane. So try to avoid, obviously, riding next to people. And all these things I'm saying motorcycle riders know. You don't want to ride in blind spots and things like that. Make yourself visible. Keep your headlights on, tail lights on. Make your, you know, wear bright colors. That's maybe not always the most comfortable thing, but there's a huge difference in seeing a motorcycle rider who's wearing a bright color with a bright helmet than seeing one that's wearing dark colors. And so make yourself as visible as possible.
We have gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Natalie. And again, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Natalie writes, what does Officer Perrine think of shows like Live PD and the light it shines and what officers deal with every day?
You know, the perspective that it gives the public, I think, is good. I think it gives them an opportunity to see the ins and outs of things that go on. But again, keep in mind that show is really only showing the highlights. You know, we spend a lot of time dealing with negative. And you got to remember, when we're dealing with people, it's usually at their worst moment. Usually they've done something bad, or they're in a bad situation, or something tragic has happened. And that can take a toll on us emotionally over time when you're always dealing on the negative side. And so shows like that, I don't always watch those because I find myself not only critiquing as a trainer things that I'm seeing, but when I take this uniform off, it's time for me to be a dad and spend time with my kids. And watching shows like that put me psychologically into a mood like I'm at work. And so I don't always watch, but I think it does give the public a great perspective of things that we deal with on a daily basis.
What is the thing that even those reality TV programs consistently get? You know, I know, for example, there are very few movies or TV shows that depict journalists accurately, that get really what we do and how we have to work. What's the thing that most of those TV programs gets wrong about police work?
You know, that's a great question, and nothing that I've really thought about. But, you know, sometimes the way they edit the footage, and Live PD I know is live, but the way they edit it sometimes doesn't give the full story or the full picture, or, you know, why they don't always do a good job of explaining why the police officer did what they did. And I'd like to almost see a narrative come in at some point and explain why the police officers are making the decisions they've made, instead of just showing it and leaving that perception up to the public.
We've gotten another question via Facebook from a listener named Julian. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Julian writes, how much tech do state troopers have in their cruisers? Indianapolis PD have lots of screens.
You know, lots of screens. No, we have our computer is our tech, and we teach our young troopers, obviously, to keep those screens down while they're driving. But we use them for maps and things like that, too. So sometimes you'll see the computer screen up if they're responding, looking for an address. But police work is definitely technology-driven. I tell you, I've seen a lot of that technology. When I graduated the police academy in 2003, I was the first class of Indiana State Police that had a computer, a laptop computer in the academy. And so that technology, when I came out, we hand wrote tickets, we hand wrote crash reports, we hand wrote our case reports, all those things were handwritten. And now most courts don't even accept a handwritten ticket. It all has to go through a computer system, an internet system. So the technology can be distracting, but we try very, very hard to keep our focus on what's important, and that's driving and protecting the public.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Danielle. And again, our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Danielle writes to guest speaker, what is IMPD doing to increase transparency in the police force with everything happening nowadays regarding police brutality? I personally feel more paranoid rather than protected around police. I feel like there needs to be full disclosure to the public of the processes and bureaucracy involved in police brutality cases. Should point out, you are not affiliated with IMPD, the Metropolitan Police.
Yeah.
You are the Indiana State Police.
Yeah.
But you've already alluded to perceptions of police that Danielle is addressing here. How do you feel about that? How transparent should the process be?
Absolutely transparent. There's nothing to hide. And so the other side of that is, sometimes people believe we're hiding things when we're really not through an investigation. And so that makes it difficult, is that perception. I would invite her to have those conversations with her local police, to go to the events that we hold, community policing events where we have coffee with a cop or things like that, and have these face-to-face conversations with the police officers. And maybe, just maybe, they can change her perception a little bit about why she has this fear. Because what you see on the news media, as far as these police brutality cases that you see, isn't always the whole story. Give us a chance to give you the whole story.
Are there things that people can do? Because this is a two-way. People, you know, unfortunately, in a country that has as many guns and as much violence as ours does, it's not an unrealistic or unreasonable fear on the part of police officers that any situation, no matter how innocent it seems, could escalate really, really quickly. Because, you know, we're 5% of the world's population. We have more than half of the world's privately owned guns. So there's a real good chance that someone you did stop for an otherwise innocent reason would have a weapon. And it could turn. What are things that people can do when they encounter police that can send those signals, you know, there is no need for this to escalate?
So you understand that as a police officer, about 90% of the communication that I'm receiving from people is body language. I'm reading body language, and that allows me to escalate or de-escalate every situation that I'm encountered in. And so I would ask people to obey the commands of the police officer. Now, I'm not saying that the police officer is always 100% correct, but you have to understand from our perspective. We're trying to understand your perspective. Understand ours is we don't know a lot of things that we want to know as far as are you a criminal? Do you have bad intentions? Are you the person I'm looking for? Have you just committed a crime? All those are questions that we're going through our mind. As soon as we have clear communication, again, that body language is big for us, but speak clearly to us. If I tell you, if you have a gun in your hand and I tell you to put that gun down, that's the time to put the gun down. As soon as you start making that motion to do that, I can start de-escalating myself so we can have a conversation. But until that happens, I have to perceive that as a threat. And so some people might say, well, I'm a legal gun owner. I'm allowed to have this gun. Why is he telling me to put it down or not to touch it? Well, you're right. We can have that conversation in about 30 seconds after
the gun
we
is
get
down.
Through this. But we can't have that conversation right now while your hand is on your gun, near your gun, or you're being argumentative. I would ask people to be calm when they're, let's have a conversation. It's not the time to argue back and forth. A lot of times you'll see an incident occur because there was a miscommunication as far as what my expectations are as a law enforcement officer and what your intentions are as a civilian. I have to know what your intentions are so I can properly react.
Yeah, I remember a police officer telling me once, one of the things that you can do, like even at a routine traffic stop, to send a signal is just keep your hands on the wheel so that the officer can see your hands and see that you don't have a weapon or anything like that. That is a reassuring signal. We've got just a little bit of time left. You told me you've gotten one request over and over again for a particular kind of video. What's it going
to
be?
You know, it tends to be that the next pet peeve of all people besides the turn signal is people driving slow in the left lane. So I'm trying to find a creative way to come up with something about those slow drivers that bog up the traffic when there's multiple lanes.
And how soon do you think we'll be able to see that?
You know, it's a busy time of year for me, but maybe by the end of the summer we'll be able to get something out.
Yes, and you are coming up on a busy, obviously, with the 4th of July just around the corner. We wish you well with that. I'd like to thank you for coming in here and sharing your story, sharing the ways that you are trying to connect with new audiences and Hoosiers. My guest has been Indiana State Police Sergeant John Perrine. He's Public Information Officer for Indianapolis District 52 and a social media guru. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments, as always. I'm John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.